This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. Orff's position as one of the most influential figures in the history of music education has been almost completely overshadowed by his one great success as a composer, his secular cantata, Carmina Burana. But even the reputation of this one big hit has been clouded. Critics and commentators have said that it's not a work to be taken at all seriously, probably because of its enormous popular success. And there have long been questions about Orff's relationship with the Third Reich. Even though he was not an overt supporter of Hitler, or even a member of the Nazi Party, he chose to remain in Germany throughout the 1930s and 40s, when other musical figures chose to flee, if they could. And questions have been raised about where his sympathies actually lay, or whether he was simply guilty of obliviousness for the sake of his art. But even though there may be questions about Carmina Burana, there will also always be performances. Orff was primarily self-taught as a composer, but even before his teens, he had begun writing songs to go with puppet shows he put on for his family. While he was in his 20s, he began studying and adapting music from earlier eras, long before the practice became fashionable. One of his first major projects was a revival of Claudio Monteverdi's 1607 opera L'Orfeo, which was almost unknown at the time, and which was greeted at its premiere with a host of negative reactions, from outrage to ridicule. Then, in 1935, he came across a collection of poems called Carmina Burana, which had first been published in 1847. The title means Songs from Bayern, which is itself a variant of Bayern, the German name for Bavaria. And the subtitle, Secular Songs to be Sung by Singers and Choruses to the Accompaniment of Instruments and also of Magical Pictures. Bayern is Benedikt Bayern, a village in the foothills of the Bavarian Alps, about 30 miles south of Munich. It takes its full name from a Benedictine monastery founded there in 733. It was a popular stopover for traveling monks and students, especially those known as Goliards, clerical students who were bold enough to satirize the church. When the monasteries were secularized in 1803, the contents of their libraries went to Munich, where, in 1847, the court librarian published an illuminated parchment manuscript of over 250 poems and songs, most in Latin, but with a fair number in Middle High German, French, and Greek, and mostly written in the 13th century. He was the one who called it Carmina Burana. When Orff found the manuscript, neither he nor really anyone else knew the original tunes of these songs, but Orff was immediately drawn to the simplicity, directness, and especially theatricality of the lyrics, most of which are concerned with the fickleness of fortune, the joys of spring, and the pleasures of food, drink, games of chance, and last but not least, lust. The opening chorus, O Fortuna Velut Luna, O Fortune Like the Moon, was the first poem in the collection, and its subject is reflected in the illustration on the front page of the book, The Turning Wheel of Fortune. Orff took this imagery as his frame for the work as a whole, choosing 24 of the poems and grouping them into three sections. The first chapter has two subheadings, Springtime and On the Green. These are pastoral and genre poems. The second section is In the Tavern, and the third is The Courts of Love, which concludes with an ecstatic address to Blanzeflor and Helena on the pursuit of the pleasures of the flesh. O Fortuna has been used in dozens of films, trailers, commercials, and television shows, usually accompanying images of epic or mock-epic doom and disaster. But seeming doom and gloom soon give way to the joyous face of spring in three poems about the renewal of the earth and the pleasures of country life. The sequence On the Green begins with an energetic dance for the orchestra, which leads into Floret Silva, an ode to the noble forest. A young girl goes to the marketplace to buy makeup, and the erotic imagery rouses the choir to the point that they are even ready to make love to the Queen of England. Orff regards the tavern as a male preserve. All of the poems in this section are for male soloists or chorus, and he begins it with an enthusiastic song for baritone, Estuans Interius, seething inside. Then comes one of the most original pieces in the cantata, the Lament of the Roast Swan. This is a solo for tenor that spends almost its entire length in the uppermost falsetto range of the singer's voice as the swan burns on the spit. Echo, 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 sumaras, 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 cocaliensis. The Abbot of Cockaigne lurches forward to sing about his land, a legendary place which was very popular with the Galliards, a land of ease and plenty where conventions are turned on their heads, monks beat their abbots, nuns are objects of desire, and the sky rains cheese. The male chorus returns with another ode to tavern life, a whirling catalog of toasts and drinkers. After a pause for breath, we enter the Cour d'Amour, the Courts of Love, with the delicate sounds of flutes and soprano voices as love flies everywhere. In Stetit Puella, there stood a girl. Things begin to heat up, as the soprano describes the girl in the red dress with her irresistible erotic radiance. The baritone sings his love song, Circa Mea Pectora, in my breast, as the male soloists engage in some locker room speculation, si puer cum puelula, if a boy and a girl linger together. A love song full of bird noises is followed by the beautiful aria, Intratina, in the scales, the song of the girl who finds it not so very difficult to choose between physical love and chastity. Here, the soprano is held to her most seductive low register against a softly pulsating accompaniment. The baritone and chorus heat things up still more, and then, in a wonderful gesture, the girl fulfills the promise of Intrutina. Dulcissime, sweetest boy, soars to the very highest reaches of the soprano's voice as she reaches her moment of ecstasy. There is a brief ode to Blanziflor et Helena, two figures legendary for their beauty and for their ability to drive men mad. This song serves as a bridge to the reprise of the Fortuna chorus. You'd never know that the words of the ringing close are an exhortation to come all and weep with me. Carmina Burana was an instant and overwhelming success. Orff ordered his publisher to burn all of his earlier works. He wrote, "Everything I have written to date, and which you have unfortunately printed, can be destroyed. With Carmina Burana, my collected works begin." This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.